Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, a podcast for teachers of physics, made by physics teachers.
Physics teachers like me, Robin Griffiths, a sort of full-time-ish teacher of physics from year 10 through to year 12.
And physics teachers like me, Thomas W.P., a part-time, A-level only teacher of physics. Well, welcome. And welcome, Robin.
Greetings, Thomas. I'm amped up and ready to talk physics today.
Excellent, because today we're going to be talking about the shockingly important topic of revising for exams.
Yes, revising. That's where you look over your notes again and again until your brain feels like it's been electrocuted.
That's one way to put it, Robin. But you're right. Revising is key to acing your physics exams. You don't want to be left in the dark when the big day comes.
That's right, Thomas. It's important to resist the temptation to skip revision and just wing it. That's a recipe for disaster, like mixing matter and antimatter.
Indeed. And speaking of matter, revising for physics exams can be an atomic bombshell. But fear not, dear listeners, because we're here to help you navigate the ins and outs of revision.
That's right, Thomas. So let's get started and make sure you're on the right frequency for your exams.
I see what you did there, Robin. But seriously, let's get down to business and explore some tips for effective revision.
It's much less unfunny than us.
And shall we introduce our third guest for the podcast?
Absolutely. Yeah, we were thinking about it. We thought, well, you know, there's a lot of fuss in the media at the moment about artificial intelligence, and we thought any type of intelligence would be quite welcome here on the podcast. So we got
OpenAI,
ChatGPT, OpenAI to write our intro for us, and we said to sort of fill it full of lots of physics type jokes. And I think Griffith's law still holds that there is still no such thing as a funny physics joke. So,
I think it did pretty well. Anyway, yes, we're talking about revision, and we put out a survey, Robin. Did you notice your internet slowing down over the weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the reply just flooded in, so thank you for that.
We broke the internet. 84 votes, which is pretty good for us. 84 votes, and the people selected revising for exams.
Yes, thank you for your input there. And it's obviously a popular topic at this time of year. And thank you for all the other suggestions as well, which were very, very good. And things that we haven't really talked about. So we will definitely find future episodes on things like how to retain physics teachers and the various other things that were suggested.
We will indeed at our slow one episode a month, Okay, so we put out the question about revising for exams, and we didn't get 84 replies to our tweet, but we did get replies, and we're going to talk about them. And I saw something useful as well on the internet that kind of links into it. So the very first reply, really, I think we'll talk about this a lot, is from David Cotton, Hammer Past Papers. And I think Dave Farmer, who followed that up, said, don't spend ages on making notes. Or if they insist, do as much of them as they can from memory, closed book, and then review and add or correct them. Now, I think that kind of, for me, that sums up my approach to revision. I think we can talk about that in some depth, because hammer past papers is easy, but I don't know about you, but I don't think that means, welcome kids, here is a past paper, you do it, I'll come around and help you. I think there are ways and ways of using it.
Yeah, no, I think I've sort of moved through various phases on this over my time in teaching, and I absolutely agree. You know, basic round past papers, they are, if you like, a really good way of doing all sorts of things to do with revision and all sorts of things to do with exams. So not only do they help you with exam technique, but also they can identify the bits of the course that you don't know very well. The thing I always say to my kids is, you know, there's not enough time. You don't have enough time to do all the revision you want to do for all the subjects you want to do. It's an economic argument. You're managing the science of scarcity now. So what should you do? Well, it's clear you should spend most of your revision time revising things that you don't know rather than stuff that you do. So if you just sit there and copy out notes, you might kid yourself you're learning lots. But let's face it, if you didn't remember it writing the notes the first time, it's unlikely to help you the second time. So try and find a way to identify what you don't know. And past papers are a fantastic way of doing that, whilst improving exam technique too.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think what Ruth Chesman said was, what's the best use of lesson time? Because we say hammer past papers, and yes, I agree with you, taking notes certainly towards the end of the GCSE or A-level is not a great revision technique. But what should we be doing in lessons? You know, I imagine we send them home with past papers to do for home learning, homework, but what are we doing in class?
Well, that's I think, a really important point, because one of the other things I hammer at revision time is to say that this is where we're handing over to you. It's we've got to enable you to revise independently. So if you like, when I'm thinking about planning a lesson with past papers or with revision, I'm thinking always in the back of my head, the skill I want them walking out with is the skill to be able to go through feedback loops on their own, basically. I don't want to have to be part of that. I can't be part of that. It would be frankly weird if they were doing their independent revision, they were able to open a drawer and ask me. That's not what they can do. So they have to, I use the class time to try and develop their independence of working with past papers in a functional way.
Okay, I'm interested to see how you do that. I mean, I think let's break this down to how we use past papers and revise in class, and then what we send them home with, and then maybe things that aren't past paper related. So I'll just give you an example of what I did this week. So, you know, I only teach A level, but we would do this at GCSE too. I get photocopied a big pack of the last like 5 years of past papers. So it's you know 2 or 3 centimeters thick, and they all have that pack, and they have to bring it to every lesson. But I don't just sit there going through it. What I'll do is before the lesson, I'll choose a long answer question. I'll set up the practical as a demo and get them to look at it and work through it, and then give them the question. So particularly on my A level with the paper 3, it's very practical based. Around the practical element, I'll get them to do it and think about it and then do the question, very much focusing on what they've learned through the practical. So that's one way I would use the paper. Have you ever done anything like that?
Yeah, I think that sounds like a really interesting way of working through. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, I think revision is one of those things. It's sort of if you go through one route, and I mean past papers I think are the core of my revision, but you do sort of get to a stage where there's a bit of fatigue with that, and you need to introduce something a bit new and something a bit different. So anything that shakes that up, I always think is a good thing. So one of the things, for example, is that in our spec, so we do EdExcel, and they tend to ask a fairly standard format of question about core practicals. So in their papers, they'll have a couple of questions probably on describing a practical and analysing some data from it and so on and so forth. So those questions tend to follow a similar pattern every time. Now, you know, and I'm sure you do this too, but the way to do it is get one of the practicals back. One of the practicals they tend to forget, one of the practicals that they don't do, just get it back into the classroom, show them the kit, mm-hmm. Say, okay, do you remember, what was this for? And then go through the process and saying, okay, when the exam board asks you about this practical, they're going to ask you about the independent variable, the dependent variable, the control variables. They're going to want to see a diagram of it. They want you to do a very brief, very straightforward method that describes not only what you do, but also how you collect reliable data.
Which graph you draw, how you use the graph to get the results, yada, yada, yada.
And so on and so forth. So that basically they're then effectively doing a past paper of sorts in that they're doing an exam board question, but they're thinking about how a practical that they've done, something that's familiar to them, something that they can see the kit in front of them, how they would reproduce that, how they would present that in an exam.
How would you use the past papers in lessons to help teach them to use past papers then?
Yeah, so basically, I first of all, I ham it up big time that basically this is all about them. I tell them this is about you developing independent revision techniques, and the best independent revision technique that you can develop for yourself is the ability to assess yourself, use the mark scheme, engage with the mark scheme, and then feed back to yourself on what you did wrong. So I say that there's a loop to go through. First of all, we talk them through, you know, what their target percentage is on a question. So all of them are targeting a particular grade, and you can usually translate that to a rough percentage of how many marks they're aiming for per question. And I say to them, okay, so you start and you take a past paper question and you give yourself a minute a mark. You do it under time conditions, one question. So if it's an 8-mark question, give yourself 8 minutes, maybe 10 at a push, just because you've got a bit of faffing time. Do the question as best you can. Don't look anything up to start with. So find out what you don't know. Find out what you can't answer. Then go in, look at the mark scheme and assess yourself. Be as harsh as you can and try and work out what the mark scheme is giving the marks for and award yourself marks accordingly. If you get stuck on anything there, if you don't understand what the mark scheme is telling you, that's when you ask me, because I can decode the mark scheme for you. I can help you with that. And usually if it's something sort of that yeah, genuinely is a skill of reading the mark scheme, I'll go through it with the whole class. Then literally I'll say one of my quick 2-minute pause, this question, this mark scheme, this is what it means, just so that you know, and like literally explicitly teach them what the mark scheme is telling them. So once they've done that, I say, okay, if you've got your target percentage in the question, move on. And if you don't have your target percentage in the question, then you go and do your flashcard, your poster, your revision notes, whatever it is you want to do, whatever your best way, but then go back and try the question again and go through the loop again.
It's remarkably similar to what I do. And I tell them the past papers are to help you identify the areas where you're uncomfortable and the areas where you're weak. And
yeah.
What you must not do is go, oh, God, I don't like that. I'm not going to do any more of those questions. You know, when you find one you can't do, that you've absolutely got to go and find the questions that you can't do. And if you can't do them and you can't access them and you can't understand the mark scheme, that is when you ask me exactly the same, very similar conversation. So, I tell them an anecdote of me. I mean, I got a B at A-level because I'd never asked for help. And there was one topic, logic it was, I couldn't make head or tail of it. Yeah. And I couldn't do that at all. I couldn't access that. Got 0 on that part of the paper. And I'm sure that's why I didn't get an A. And then when I went to uni and did my engineering degree, I had to do logic. And it was so easy. I asked someone, he explained it to me. And it was so easy. I was so, you know, I've learned from that. I never asked for help. And that cost me.
Yeah, so I'd tell them as well. The other thing is it's all about comfort. I mean, you know, I'd go through the comfort zone argument. I think you've mentioned it there, that the idea that you naturally, as a person, we all do it. We all tend to gravitate towards where we feel comfortable, towards what we know. So we pick out questions that naturally pick out questions that we're going to be good at. We naturally focus in on the ones where we're not very good at it. We try to duck out. We sit there and say, oh, well, I can't answer this question, so I'll just stop there and I'll do the revision instead of trying the question. And this is where I really challenge them. I said, no, you have to go through this process, because when it comes to the summer exam, you're not going to get to duck out of the question. You're not going to get to go and look it up. And the cardinal sin, I tell them, the worst thing that you can possibly do, the most waste of time that you can do and the most waste of your resources, is to sit there and copy out of the revision guide all your notes,
absolutely,
or the mark scheme into the question paper. If you do that, I'd say, you know, basically I could go to the junior school, nick a year 4, and they can do that. So don't do that.
I completely agree. I think I say to them, come Easter, and I don't know how you teach it through it, but I always will end the week before Easter on my content. I've done a bit fast this year because we added an extra lesson, and I paced it a bit too, taught at my usual pace and got there a bit soon. But I say, you know, you shouldn't, for me, you shouldn't be doing note taking after the start of the Easter holidays, because for better or for worse, the way it's examined is by taking an exam. And so you've got to practice doing exam questions and exam technique. It's interesting you've said you talked to them about exam technique. I mean, I think I teach exam technique all through the 2 years.
Yeah.
I do so many questions through the years. I draw it. I always write on the board. You know, I put a PDF up and I write on it always.
Yeah.
And demonstrate technique. But I think, you know, the past papers are so important at this stage. It's how they're being assessed. And I honestly think if they do 10 past papers, they bump themselves up a grade.
Absolutely.
And it's just how we use them and keep it fresh for them, like you said.
So one thing I do while we're going through all this is when I have a discussion with, and of course they're all doing different questions there because of the way I do it, because they're all picking out the bits they're weak in. So I've got some doing radioactivity, some doing whatever, some doing electricity. But what I'll do is on the board at the front, I will do a kind of revision, I don't know, what you call it, sort of splodge, if you like, a mind map, whatever you want to call it, but just of things that have come up. So, for example, you know, don't forget, I have got this thing which I picked up off a good friend of ours, Andy Harrison, who used to do, I don't know if you remember it, rah, RRA. And he always used to have this thing when you're describing a practical, don't forget your rah. And he used to have a picture of a lion up on the board, and I hope that they'd remember. But RRA was RRA, which stood for repeats, remove anomalies, take an average, and he would say that no practical description that where it takes readings is complete unless you've got those three ideas into your method somewhere. Because he's absolutely right, basically, in these things. You'll see there's at least one, often two marks for mentioning those particular stages, and it's a very, very easy thing to get a mnemonic in their heads about that. So if Ra comes up in one of the questions, Ra will go up on the board. Don't forget your Ra. Unit conversions, which is something at our school particularly, for some reason, our students really struggle with. So they'll be up there, you know, kilo to no prefix to milli and mega, and what they all mean and how to convert and do all that sort of stuff. So as things come up, it goes up on the board with little mnemonics. And then they can either take a picture of that with their device or whatever it is at the end of the lesson, or I'll share it on our learning area or whatever it happens to be.
So another way I use past papers is I like to sort of press on a particular type of question. Mm-hmm. And I want to give a shout out to Gary Adams at Gruz9.
Thank you, Gary.
He very kindly shared a little folder, a Google Drive, which we'll put a link of in the show notes, about where he has gone out and pre-selected for people a list of questions. So one of my questions I think they find very hard, for example, is the one where they say, the speed of a car is V and it doubles its speed. What happens to the kinetic energy? Does it quadruple? Does it square root? Does it stay the same? As you know, is it proportional to V squared? Is it proportional to V? That sort of thing. Mm. I'm not explaining that very well. He's put together a list of like 25 of that exact question that he's found in past papers, and they put a PDF up, which I think is extremely useful.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how much of a back catalogue we'll have here, but if next year they go back, and I sincerely hope they don't, but if next year they go back to learning equations, this is not relevant for this year, 2023
yes,
exams.
They've announced, haven't they, for the GCSEs, they still get a formula sheet.
Yeah, so there's a formula sheet for the GCSE crowd this year, which is fab, and they've got that, and the exam board, my exam board's released it at least already, so that's all good. But if they have to go back to learning equations, 23 equations is a fantastic app that you can get on Android and I believe in iOS as well. That basically you can just put in the spec that you're working off, and it will basically give all sorts of tests and learning activities and all sorts of things to help them to learn the equations. If it's on their phone, they can spend 2 minutes on it at a bus stop, and it's still useful time. So that's a very, very good way of learning those equations. Have you got any apps that you use?
For revision, I'm not big on apps at all, really. I'm a believer in giving them a billion past papers, but keeping them fresh and using them in different ways. I think that's quite important.
Yeah, on a wider case, actually, one of my sixth formers put me onto an app called Flora this year, which was really interesting. It's much wider than just physics. It's a way of them organising their revision time more widely. So it's a way of them producing revision timetables, which, again, you know, from a pastoral point of view, in my sixth forms, I'm always talking about organise your time. You don't have enough time to revise everything you want to do, so you must apportion your time carefully based on the teacher's feedback. If you're getting an A star in psychology and a D in physics, you need to give physics more time, etc., etc. So we go through that. But Flora does that very, very well. And my sixth formers rave about it. They love it. So Flora app is out there.
We'll put that in the show notes. I think that's a good one. I mean, that refers back to the whole thing of if you are a gooder question, you should do fewer of that question, not more.
Yes.
Which is an easy trap to fall into. Well, I'm really good at, you know, circuits of questions. I'm going to do loads of those, just get my eye in. And then you leave out the logic gates. So but the Roth Chesmer's question I think is interesting. What's the best use of lesson time? I mean, how would a revision lesson work with yours if you're doing past papers? Do they all sit there doing the same thing, or are they doing their own thing in your lessons, or does it depend on the day?
Yeah, it depends on the day. If I find a question that is universally struggled with, then I'll sort of zero in on that. But I guess if I take a step back, yeah, my revision lesson, how does it start? Well, it starts with a knowledge quiz. I use Plickers. I've mentioned that before. I'll put a link in the show notes. But basically, Plickers is like any other. Everybody will have their own favourite knowledge quiz way of working, and Microsoft Forms is great too. But I start off with that because it's quick fire, and it takes about the first 10 minutes. And it's a really good way of them zeroing in again on little bits, little snippets of knowledge that they might not know, a unit that they've forgotten, or a definition that they couldn't reproduce or something like that. And again, that gives them something in their revision list that they need to go away and sort. Then I'll move on. I give them all past paper packs with all of the past papers that I can lay my hands on, huge, great, thick wads of it. The Green Committee hate me, but you know, they have to write in the exam, and they have to write on paper, so I give them those paper copies. And I tell them exactly that brief, you know, avoid the ones you're good at, zero in on the ones you're bad at, go through that golden feedback loop that I've described earlier, and work away. I'm busy talking to them, trying to gauge, you know, where they're having problems. If I see there's a general problem, if they're all struggling with a refraction question, we'll do a little bit of refraction recap. Very, very brief, usually, really just, you know, to the same level of detail as the revision guide. And again, that'll be up on the front in my big splodge of all the things that we've discussed and learnt today, so that they know that's there and they can see that there. And that reminds them that that was something we were all struggling with. That's something that they might need to revise.
There's something I've been doing recently for that knowledge, Chris, at the start, because it's remarkable how similar we are. I mean, I give them a 30 multi-choice questions to do, and then I come up with the answers on the board, and I just go through very quickly saying, touch the ceiling if you got this right. And it always picks up five or six questions. So I'll have given them 30 questions on DC circuits, for example. So, and then I will go through those six questions, and that usually gets them thinking, and then you know, either I'll let them do their own thing and concentrate, just like you said, or I'll say, right, let's do this long answer question. Or if I've set multi-choice on DC circuits, I'll have DC circuits kit there. I'll set up a few little testing challenges for them. I have a top tip for that wadge of that paper, papers.
Yes,
it really annoys me. I mean, you can't get past it, but when you print it out and then print it double-sided, two to a page, when you print it two to a page, which obviously we do because we like trees a bit, page one is on the left and page two is on the right, which is the back of page one. So you don't get the double page spreads if you print it. So what I always ask is, could they please put a blank sheet in the front and a blank sheet on the bottom? And then the double page spreads come out correctly. Now, I think that is important because quite a lot of questions, the right-hand side of the page will refer to the left-hand side of the page. It's a small detail, but I think it does make a difference.
Yeah, no, fair enough. That's a good tip, isn't it? I mean, it's a good one. So going back
to Ruth Chessman, what's the best use of lesson time? They sit through past papers. We model a work through. We focus on specific question types. We like six markers, multi-choice, practical math skills. We focus on specific topics, retrieval of key facts. They fill in the. I think for me, you do all those things.
Yes.
Because you've got to keep the papers fresh. So sometimes I'll say, go in, we sit down, 10 minutes, you're going to do this question on this paper, because they'll bring the pack to every lesson. I always say to them, we'll work through front to back and you work through back to front. So usually the front of the pack is unused by Easter. Because we always do a mock after Easter. They've all gone off to revise for this big mock. I've chosen one question, I get them to do it under exam conditions for 10 minutes, then we go through it. And I might have a kit around to help them think about it. But yeah, also I'll do six markers. Like I'll do, you know, we did that podcast, which we'll mention in the show notes, about the six long answer questions. And I use the resources there. Dr. Pope Does Physics, maybe? Was it him who we had on the other, last time? I use that. I think that's very useful.
Yeah.
And I might, you know, jump into a six-pointer because they are useless at six-pointers. It's like a physics thing, isn't it? They need to build up their literacy. So I think, you know, concentrating on specific question types is a really good idea. And that's what Gary Adams has given us. He's given us a few little decks of specific question types.
Thanks, Gary. Top sharing. Thank you very much. But yes, absolutely. I do that as well. And I think with revision, often post-it notes are fantastic. Class resource for revision. Ask your technician to get some. But one of the things I'll do, particularly with six markers, is, you know, hand out post-it notes, and I'll say, you know, here's your post-it notes. Grab a post-it note. I want to see a different. Read this answer, and don't worry about trying to construct it. Don't worry about. But I just want to see at least six keywords or key terms that you're going to use in this answer to start. Go through that. Go write them down on the piece. And particularly with weaker students, this is for GCSE, particularly weaker groups. Just say, okay, you know, five, six keywords, whatever you can do that are around this topic. Things that you think should be included in that answer. Maybe they won't come up with a full six, but hopefully they will. Then ask them from that point. Just work those into a phrase or a sentence that, you think explains why you think they should be in there. Basically, just, you know, how they answer the question. Work up your key term or key word into an idea. Into it doesn't have to be a full sentence, but just something you can. Then I say, okay, now put them in order that you think they should answer the question. I said, and now just make bullet points in your answer and put them in there. That's your six marker answer.
Yeah, exam technique,
breaking it right down.
Exam technique is so important.
But the thing is, I mean, that planning process obviously takes a lot longer than the 6 minutes that they have in theory in the exam to do it. So I say, you know, in the exam, you won't have that time. But what you will be able to do is just in the margin, in pencil, jot down those ideas and then do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 next to them and then work them up into your answer so that they've just broken it down and they've seen that it's not a scary thing. Six mark questions do not have to be a massive free flowing load of text like in an English essay. What they need to do is just reproduce 6 points in a relatively coherent order. And again, you know, with most students, what's the average mark for a six-mark question? Is it
2 or 3, isn't it?
It's certainly around half-ish, isn't it? And so I say to them, you know, particularly for the weaker students, if you're getting 3 out of 6 on this, you're smashing it. And that's absolutely fine by me.
Yeah, I think at GCSE and A-level, when you're looking at a six-point question, it's really 3 2-point questions. If you look at it, they usually give you the answer must include this bullet point, and this bullet point. And if they break it down and answer each of those as a 2-point question, it's much less daunting.
Absolutely.
I think exam techniques are super important in revision. You know, if I go through those multi-choice questions I talked about earlier, so often, just with common sense, you can knock out 2 and make it a 50-50. And I'm constantly banging on about that. You know, I usually start with which other two we can knock out straight away. Usually there's 2.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think just those little things like that, like the word explain means use an equation in physics. It means use an equation. Discuss means don't use an equation. Explain means use an equation. I think those things are super important. I've been helping out at a local school that has no physics teacher. And I think the kids, when I said that to the kids, explain me to use an equation, they were like, what witchcraft is this? Because I think that's the thing a non-specialist probably doesn't know.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of help that you can get. It's another thing I'd point to, particularly if you're a non-specialist and you're working with physicists. Working with your physics students. It is the examiner's reports that come from the exam board. They're a really underused resource. And if you do get a few minutes over Easter to have a look and read those. Oh, sorry, are you about to tell me?
No, I'm looking guilty because I used to read them. I haven't read them for years.
Well, no, the thing is, that's the point. I think once you've read a few of them, you realise the same things crop up again and again every year. Once you've got those on board, things like explain, use the equation to explain. You can, when you read it, you can see the frustration of the examiners coming through. When they sit there, go, we pointed this out last year and the year before, and still lots of students didn't do X, Y, and Z. It is just, you know, making sure, because those common mistakes are always pointed out in the examiner's report, and you can save your students a fortune in terms of lost marks just by highlighting them to them. Correct significant figures will be penalised in our exam board at least twice on each paper. Those are 2 marks that you will miss that you don't need to miss just by getting your significant figures right. It doesn't take a lot to get yourself in the habit. Training yourself when you're doing equations, getting that automaticity there in terms of getting the right number of significant figures, gauging what they are in the question, reproducing the right number of significant figures in the answer.
Yeah, they have to make that a habit, don't they? They really have to make that a habit.
And there are loads like that. There are loads in the examiner's report that they talk about every year.
I only look at it now when there's a question I don't understand. And they've been pretty good, AQA. They had a really bad run, and there was one question that I just couldn't understand why they were asking it. And I felt the examiner's report was a bit mealy-mouthed. Well, very few children, or very few students, were able to get this right. What we were looking for was this. And I'm thinking, God, that is arcane and not fair. Not fair on the kids. Yes. Anyway, we digress. So, revision. Hammer past papers is good advice. What are we saying? Keep them fresh. Use them in different ways. If there's a good long question with a practical in it, get them to do the practical, then get them to do the question. I think that works really, really super well because it's fresh in their mind and it gives them stuff to talk about and helps them, particularly in A-level for the practical papers. And I think GCSE, because they do have to talk about practicals, it's making them think about what they learnt in the practical that, that they need to regurgitate. It's like, I'll give them a practical that uses a micrometer and get them to write ratchet in their answer, because I've seen that on the mark scheme a few times. Yeah. Twiddle, turn the ratchet.
Ratchet, yeah, absolutely. You always think one flew over the cuckoo's nest when you see that. And FET, of course, as well. I would point to FET as well as a great selection of resources that they can get, particularly for electricity. I think the circuit... I noticed in the great FET challenge where they were having votes between pairs of FET simulations to work out what the grand champion was in the knockout competition, that the circuit construction kit rightfully, I think, won out. It is a fabulous resource for helping them to remember electricity. They can use it at home.
Yeah, it's brilliant. As is the photoelectric effect, which they still haven't done, sadly, on HTML5, as far as I know.
Yeah.
But that's a good one. I think we're also saying taking notes. That's what Dave Farmer says, I think you agree, taking notes come Easter is not the way forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Particularly at A-level. I think at GCSE, which is much more knowledge-based and skills-based, I mean, we haven't really talked about exam technique a super amount. You know, when there's two marks, one mark for substitution, one mark for getting the answer right, all that sort of stuff, you can teach them. I think that's what past papers are for, is to teach them. The first thing they do is look at how many marks the question's out of, because that is a huge steer as to what they're supposed to do. Do you press reading through the paper with them?
I don't do that, because I think that's one of those things that they will get. I think most of my students by this stage are okay with reading the paper, and I don't want to spend a huge amount of time taking them through a skill that they don't know. Where I identify an individual who may be struggling with decoding the paper, I'll actually spend some time with that student one-on-one to try and
That's not what I mean. I mean, do you drill them in the first 5 minutes of the exam? They flick through the paper and see what it's about.
Oh, I see.
Because it gives them that, it gives them more time to think. You know, you were talking about there's no time to do, you've only got 6 minutes to do your long answer question. No, if you read through the paper, you've got 80 minutes to think about it. And I say to them, you know, how often have you gone to sleep with the problem and woken up with the solution? Your subconscious does work on stuff. So if you read through it, I think it's a core, key skill, is to teach them to read through the paper. And when I give them a unit test, I will make them read the paper before they put the pen to paper.
No, fair play.
Just to show them it doesn't affect how long the paper takes, because they're prepared. And I say, if you read through the paper and there's a question you know you can do, do it first. Get your confidence up. And you save the worst one to last, so you don't spend hours on it fretting. Just do that one last. Do it in a different order. You don't have to do it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, do you?
No, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. You know, get the low-hanging fruit first. I've tended to probably neglect that as a piece of advice, simply because the papers, of course, these days, you know, tend to go, they start off with slightly easier questions and move on to more difficult ones. But I suppose any question is difficult if you don't know the topic. So, yeah.
I evangelise about that. One of my schools, I split the class into half and got half of them to sit there not starting and half to start, and show them that A, they all finished at the same time, and B, there was not a statistical difference between the two groups. So, it's a small number, but what I was saying is, you all think reading through is a disadvantage. It's clearly not a disadvantage, and I can think of so many reasons it's a good idea. Always read through the paper.
No, that's a good one. I'm having that. That's my development tip for the night. That's good. So yeah, so I think you mentioned actually there decoding the question. I think that's a really important part of the mark scheme bit of working with past papers. The only real way for them to get into the mindset of the examiner is by basically decoding, unpicking, working with the mark scheme, I think. I think it's the most efficient way, and it's the most beneficial way for them. They start to realise how little they have to say to get the marks, which is really important, I think. So many of my students overwrite in questions. They get the 2 marks in the first 2 lines and then just write another whole load of waffle after it. And this is GCSE, obviously not so much at A-level, but you're sitting there thinking, just stop there, you're fine. Stop. But
don't talk yourself out of it.
Exactly. And the mark scheme, of course, working with it, giving themselves that feedback, that helps them to realise just how little you have to say.
Yes, I think teaching them to decode the mark scheme is important. And the acronyms in there are sort of hieroglyphics, aren't they, that they need to be aware of.
we talked, and most of our talk has been centered around past papers, and that's where most of our revision sits, right?
Correct.
And so we've talked about how getting the students to engage with the past papers in a constructive way is so, so, so important. It's a skill they need to learn.
Yes, I 100% agree, and I 100% agree that it's examined by papers. They have to do past papers. They have to absolutely. At this stage, this late stage of the year.
That's good. I mean, is there anything that was my kind of takeaway? Anything you want to?
Yeah, I just want to emphasise, help them not get bored of past papers.
Yes.
Do practicals through the medium of the past papers. Don't just give them practicals. Although I did do that the other day. We were all a bit sick of past papers. So I gave them some challenge practicals. I actually set out some circuits, because my lot asked me, you know, this is going away from past papers. But my lot asked me to do some DC circuits because they're really nervous about it. So I just set out 4 DC circuits and said, if you connect those 2 red wires together, what will happen? You're not allowed to touch the circuit. And basically put some random, you know, I didn't really put much thought into it. It was interesting, though. I did have 2 cells in parallel with a single cell, and the single cell was joined on when you connected it. That was interesting. That surprised me, actually.
We can put that as a problem in the show notes. Can you solve? No, I think that's really important. I think I was going to say it can get quite slogging and demoralising after a while, particularly if you're zeroing in on the stuff you don't know. So yeah, make a little bit of fun in there as well. So
yeah, always link it to the past paper. Yeah, always link it to the past papers. I will find a question that involves a micrometer, and then I will bring micrometers and a whole variety of objects to the class. I say, right, find me the cross-sectional area of a pencil lead, find me the cross-sectional area of a pencil, find me the cross-sectional area, choose the best tool out of a micrometer and a vernier, and we just have a bit of fun playing with stuff, and it just breaks it up a bit.
Yeah.
And it's still through the medium of past papers.
Yes, indeed, and the other thing is also, you know, kind of a competition element of it. You know, you can put pairs in competition with each other and things like that, just to, again, break up the monotony.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Robin. Thank you, dear listeners, for being involved and voting in your tens.
Thanks to everybody who not only voted but also contributed as well. Thank you for all the tips on revision. We hope you've done them justice.
No one listens to the end of the podcast, but if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com, Twitter @physicstp, or Instagram @physics_teaching_podcast.
Good Lord, Instagram as well. Marvellous.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Thomas. Catch you next month.
Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast. The podcast is presented by me, Thomas WP, with Robin Griffiths, and produced and edited by me, with Robin doing the show notes. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next month.